God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
Imagine the following scenario. It's late at night. Your husband is on a business trip, and someone is trying to jimmy your side door. You are home alone and quickly dial emergency 911. No one answers. You can't believe it. You dial again. An elderly-sounding person answers. You want a police officer, someone asks? Lots of luck, honey. They all left. They ain't working for free. They've been defunded. This is Pastor Larry. Thank you for tuning in to your Watchman on the Wall broadcast of Southwest Radio Church. Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva said defund police advocates have selective amnesia. He accused them of ignoring all the good police officers that they do during hard times and trouble. Villanueva recalled a November shooting at Saugus High School in Santa Clarita, California, in which two students were killed by a classmate. Just ask the parents of that school what they think about defunding school police, the sheriff said. It was off-duty law enforcement that was the first on the scene within seconds. Right after the horrible attack of 9/11, we were reminded that we should not judge all Muslims by the actions of a few Muslims. That certainly applies to law enforcement. We shouldn't judge all police by the actions of a few. America has certainly been blessed with revivals and great preachers. We just heard Bill Federer speak about George Whitefield. He was one of the great preachers of early America. Others followed in the steps: Jonathan Edwards, William Tennant and his son Gilbert Tennant, Ebenezer Pemberton, James Davenport, Samuel Finley, Theodore Frelinghuysen, and of course, missionary to the Indians, David Brainerd. What a great history we have in our country. Our guest today is our friend and yours, Bill Federer. We're going to continue our previous discussion. Bill, thanks for being on the show once again.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, let's look at the thread running through the Second Great Awakening, the Yale Revival, World Missionary Movement, and so forth, Hawaii, Whitman, Missionaries to the Northwest, YMCA, Salvation Army, on and on and on. Tell us about that exciting story.
So, like a wave comes in and goes out, but then comes back again. We have the First Great Awakening, and then it ebbs, but now it comes back as the Second Great Awakening Revival. And you have, for example, James McCready. He's a pastor of a couple small churches in the Kentucky backwoods, and he has his men fast and pray one Saturday a month for revival. They get together, all the churches, for a meeting. 500 people show up. Then they have another meeting, 1,500 show up. Another meeting, 8,000 show up. Another 15,000. Another 25,000 people show up in the Kentucky woods. I mean, there's only 1,500 people in Lexington, Kentucky, and here there's 25,000. They travel from a half dozen different states to get there, and they camp out. So they're called camp meetings. They're criticized for being, quote-unquote, emotional, but people's lives change at these meetings. One of the witnesses said that they would have platforms built every 30 yards, like seven of them around this big crowd. And you would get out of the earshot of one preacher and come into the earshot of the other preacher. And some of the people would be, you know, sitting there under conviction. Some would be on their knees and their faces before the Lord repenting. Some would be lifting their hands and praising the Lord and singing. And it was all happening at the same time as you would walk through it. Anyway, so this began to impact the country. And one of the interesting stories was it happened in two parts. One was the backwoods. Another is Yale. Now, you had the American Revolution, French Revolution. French Revolution was preceded by Voltaire, who mocked Christianity and would push this irreligion and infidelity and skepticism. And so when they had a revolution, the bottom fell out, and they chopped off 40,000 heads in Paris. And it was this, you know, if there's no God, there's no right and wrong. And that turned into the socialism movement. Equality, liberty, fraternity. Fraternity is the French word for socialism. So all the socialist movements say you can chop a bunch of heads off and overthrow a country to set up your, you know, socialist dictatorship. Anyway, this filters into America's campuses. And so in the early 1800s, you got this deism and infidelity on the campuses. And so Yale president Timothy Dwight, rather than sit in his office, he goes down at the lunch table, listens to all the students tell their deist and skeptic type stuff. And after they get done talking, he says, I listen to you, now you listen to me. And one by one, he refutes all of their arguments, so much so that it starts a revival. His son, Cyrano Edward Dwight, who became a U.S. Senate chaplain, he was at Yale at the time, and he says, from that moment, infidelity was not only without a stronghold, but without a lurking place. And he talked about the whole of Yale campus seemed for a time to press into the kingdom of God like a chapel of prayer. And so at this same time, you have whaling boats, and they had oil from whale blubber. And they're chasing these whales around the world, and they stop off in Hawaii, and some Hawaiian boys jump onto the boat and come back to Connecticut. And this exact time this revival is going on, they end up getting saved. And so one of them is Thomas Hopu, the other's Henry Opukuaya, and they end up inspiring Hiram Bingham and others to go all the way to Hawaii. And on the second boatload of missionaries to Hawaii was a black woman, Betsy Stockton. Here she was, a servant in the house of the president of Princeton. He teaches her to read. He lets her read every book in his library, and she reads enough missionary stories to decide she wants to be a missionary. He intercedes with the mission board, and she ends up getting, you know, supported to be on the second boatload of missionaries to Hawaii. And she writes about being on the beach with the Hawaiian kids, teaching them the Bible, and it spreads this revival throughout Hawaii. And this is, at the same time, the Haystack prayer meeting that takes place. What's that? So you have, in the early 1800s, there is Williams College in Massachusetts, and some students are walking back to campus across a field, and there's a sudden torrential thunderstorm, and they jump under a haystack until the rain passes. While they're there, they begin to pray, and they pray for world missions, and then they commit their lives to world missions. The rain stops. They go back to class. They tell all the other students that they just committed their lives to world missions. The other students start committing their lives, and they start the American Board of Foreign Missions. In the next 50 years, they send out 1,200 missionaries to India, China, Hawaii, and amongst them is Adoniram Judson. And so in 1812, he and his brand new wife leave and go all the way to Burma, and they end up evangelizing there. And then you have Jefferson, Louisiana Purchase, Lewis and Clark. And evidently, Lewis and Clark must have mentioned something to some of the Indians about the Bible, because years later, four Indian chiefs, the Nez Perce and the Flathead, walk all the way from the Oregon Territory, and they wind up in St. Louis, Missouri, 1831, 2,000 mile. And there just happens to be a Methodist big Bible convention, and these Indians are walking around looking for the book to heaven. And so this story is printed in the Methodist newspaper, and it's read by Dr. Marcus Whitman and his wife Narcissa. And so they leave Massachusetts, come to St. Louis, go all the way out to the Oregon-Washington Territory, and they're witnessing amongst the Indians. They get word that the British are trying to take over the Northwest, and America has politicians wanting to give it away to the British. And so Marcus Whitman goes all the way back 4,000 miles to Washington, D.C., and talks the president into not giving it away. And he, Marcus Whitman, begins the Oregon Trail of the caravan of wagon trains. And it's the largest non-emergency human migration in history, just tens of thousands of people going out there. But again, this revival, the Second Great Awakening revival, begins to spread. And one of them is John Stewart. He's a black man, a free black, and he is in Virginia, and he dyes clothes for a living, like blue jeans. And he's traveling to Ohio to set up a business, and he's robbed of his life savings. And he's so upset, he wants to go to the nearest bar and drink himself to death. And then he's going to commit suicide and throw himself in the river. Right before he jumps in, he hears someone call his name. Looks around, there's nobody there. Starts walking back to town, hears singing. It's a camp meeting revival, and he goes in there. He gets saved. He goes there for weeks. His drinking buddy says, hey, one more last night of binge drinking. He says, okay, well, that very day his friend dies, so he's not going to go back to that. And then he prays all night long at this camp meeting, and the next morning he feels the Lord impress on his heart to walk northwest. So he starts walking, wades across streams and hills for days, winds up at the Wyandot Indian tribe. They had never been evangelized. They're about to do an Indian dance. He sings a Negro spiritual, you know, a gospel hymn in his deep bass voice, and the Indians get quiet, and they listen. At the end of his song, one Indian says, more. So he sings more. They find an interpreter. He preaches the gospel. They eventually get saved. And then when they do the Indian Removal Act, that whole tribe migrates, and they found Wyandotte City, which a few years later they renamed Kansas City. So Kansas City, Missouri, is founded by this Christian Wyandotte Indian tribe that was all saved by this black man, John Stewart, that got saved at a camp meeting revival.
Well, you know, Bill, it's so tragic to me. So many of our young people who are rioting and demonstrating and who think socialism is good, they really are totally ignorant of American history and certainly of Christian history in America. When you mentioned this black man and then this black woman had such a passion for Christ, and there was love, there was grace, there was no killing and murder, but there was bringing the word of life, the gospel of Jesus Christ. My, that's something we need right now, right today in the United States.
That's why my wife and I put together this book. It's called Miracles in American History, Volume 2, Amazing Faith That Shaped the Nation. Of all of these great stories of how one person can be turned on to the Lord and make a big, huge difference in the world. And, you know, from the Northwest Territory in America in Kansas City, there's the Charles Finney was an attorney. And he was, you know, in his 20s, and he is reading the law book and sees references to Blackstone's commentary. Well, Blackstone is referencing the Bible. His law commentaries were the most popular ones in America. And so Charles Finney buys a Bible, and he reads it, and he says, well, God, if you're true, you're going to have to reveal yourself to me. So he goes out into the woods and prays for hours. And then he goes back into his office and locks the door and prays, and he says he felt waves of liquid love. He just felt the presence of the Lord. And the next thing he knows, it's morning. And someone comes in, you know, knocks on the door, comes into the office. It's a church deacon who's suing another church deacon and asks how his case is coming along. And Charles Finney says, I'm sorry, I've been retained by the Lord, and I cannot argue your case anymore. Well, he ends up presenting the gospel with the conviction of an attorney before a jury. He's the one who began using colloquial language to refer, you know, instead of these and thous. He's the one who invented altar calls. He says, you serve the devil openly. I'm going to call for you to stand up right where you at and commit yourself to serve the Lord openly. And so his lectures on revival says, look, being a Christian is more than just going to church. You have to have some fruit. And his lectures are read by George Williams, who starts the YMCA, Young Men's Christian Association. And they're read by William and Catherine Booth, who start the Salvation Army. And then they're in his church in New York is Jeremiah Lamphier, and he starts a prayer meeting that turns into the Layman's Prayer Revival. But
we've got two solid minutes, and I love the story about New York City because I'm originally from New York City, so please tell us that story.
Right. So it's called the Layman's Prayer Revival. You have a gentleman named Jeremiah Lamphier. It's 1857. There's a financial panic, and everybody is worried about what's happening in the country. There's railroad bankruptcies and factories being closed. 900 mercantile firms in New York City went out of business. And so at this financial crisis, there's even a farmer in St. Louis that has to pawn his gold watch. The guy's name was Ulysses S. Grant. He was a retired captain, and this is before the Civil War. So Jeremiah Lamphier puts a sign out in front of a building and says, come in at noon and pray. And, you know, maybe one person comes in. And again, he had been going to the church that Charles Finney had started. Well, the next week, a couple dozen show up. The next week, a couple hundred. The next week, thousands. The next week, there's 50,000 people in New York, which in a city of 800,000, this was a huge amount. Utica, New York, thousands praying. Albany, New York, and Newark, New Jersey, Boston, all across Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., thousands of people. And it's a layman's prayer revival. There's no church organizing it. It's just spontaneous. And this spreads. Well, who does it impact? A businessman, he's a shoe salesman in Chicago named D.L. Moody. And so he hears this. He decides to take an abandoned saloon and start a Sunday school class for inner city kids. It grows to 1,500. He says it's the masterpiece of the devil to think that children cannot understand the gospel when Jesus made a child the example of faith. Well, it's 1861 now, and Lincoln is in Springfield. He just got elected president, and he goes through Chicago on his way to D.C. He stops off and attends the Sunday school class. And after the class, D.L. Moody says, well, you know, Mr. President, is there anything you want to say? Lincoln said, I was once up as poor as any boy in this school, but I am now president of the United States. And if you attend to what is taught you here, some of you may yet be president of the United States. So he encouraged him. And D.L. Moody went on to preach to hundreds of thousands of people all across America with the, you know, YMCA there in Chicago and in New York, the great Roman Hippodrome. He used P.T. Barnum, Barnum and Bailey Circus, let him use his auditorium on Sundays. And 25,000 people in New York were meeting.
Let me jump in here because we don't want to cut you off. We're going to have you back for another show. Thank you so much for this. And we want to pick up with Moody and Barnum and all of that. Friends, be sure to tune in. And we're talking about America. We're talking about the Holy Spirit touching hearts. We're talking about revival. We want revival. And I want to see every heart, every listener inflamed and desirous of revival, crying out to God for revival. Matthew, please step up to the mic. You've got some important information for our listeners.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today are two great books by Susie and Bill Federer. At a time when they are tearing down statues and trying to rewrite history, it is great to have documentation of how miraculous our country really is. God really blessed America. The first book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 1. You can have a copy for a gift of $22 if you live in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. You can also order by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And this book, as well as all of our materials, are available on our website at swrc.com. The second book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 2. This book is also for a gift of $22. Better yet, get both books, Volumes 1 and 2, for a gift of $40. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And they are available on our website at swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
The most efficient form of government is the monarchy. That's ruled by one leader. That's an efficient form of government. One person decides to do something, whether it be to declare war, to add ships to the Navy, or whatever, and it gets done. That one person does not have to run his or her ideas through Congress or some other committee, where there may be disagreement and debate. This is why historians say that a monarchy is the most efficient form of government. Since our founders did not choose government by monarchy, America, you might say, is based on an inefficient form of government.
With a monarchy, there is very little risk. The lower the liberty, the lower the risk. If everything in life is laid out before you, and no divergence is permitted, there is little risk. But while there is little risk, there is also very little liberty. The safest place of all, generally speaking, with little risk, is prison. The prison will feed you, take care of your health and dental needs, and prescribe a daily routine. You will be told what you can do and what you can't do. But who wants to live in a prison?
Do people want to trade their liberty for security? Yes. Many times security is sought after more fervently than liberty. At the time of the American Revolution, there were those who did not want to trade their security for their liberty. Some were businessmen who traded with England. Others were very practical and said, "How can we go to war with England and ever hope to win? We don't have an army and we don't have a navy. England has a great army and an even greater navy. Revolution is madness," they said. They did not want to trade their security for liberty. It was too dangerous.
However, while a monarchy is the most efficient form of government, it is a very dangerous form of government. Do you know why? Because every monarch, like every human being, has a horrible spiritual disease. It's called sin. The best of men are but men at best. We are sinners. We make mistakes. We are often deceived and make bad decisions. Decisions that might be made on the basis of popularity, whim, or some other factor that leads us in the wrong direction.
Yes, Marvin, we remember the example of the king of Persia in the book of Esther. He was influenced by a wicked man, a man named Haman. Haman hated the Jewish people because Esther's uncle, Mordecai, would not bow down to Haman. So Haman persuaded the king to destroy all the Jewish people in the entire Persian Empire. And so the king foolishly passed a decree, an official law, that on a certain day all the Jewish people in the kingdom of Persia would be killed. Monarchs are fallible like everyone else. But many monarchs have come to believe a dangerous doctrine, the doctrine of the divine right of kings.
In its earliest history, Israel was a theocracy, which means ruled by God. But the people looked around at other nations of the world and saw that these other nations had kings, so they wanted to have a king like everyone else. Samuel tried to warn the people about the danger of having a king.
Yes, in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 1 through 9, we read that Samuel was getting older. Samuel's sons were not honest like their father. So the people demanded a king. Samuel went to the Lord about this matter, and the Lord said, "Do what they want. They're not rejecting you, they are rejecting me. But warn them about the dangers of having a king."
The American form of government is not the most efficient, but it is the best. Be careful of trading your liberty for security. Benjamin Franklin said, "Any society that will give up a little liberty to gain a little security will deserve neither and lose both."
We've all seen photos of different people groups from around the world. Some are very dark-skinned, others are fair. If we all have common parents, and if we are all family, how did the differences originate?
There would have to be widely separated groups of people, isolated from one another. They would marry within their own group and develop regional features common to their area. The Tower of Babel account, as recorded in Genesis 11, provides the historic basis for the formation of such widely disparate people groups.
Verse 1 of Genesis 11 records that everyone spoke the same language. This produced a great deal of unity. If people can communicate, they can do business with one another, marry one another, and effectively relate to one another. However, when God confused the languages and people could no longer communicate, there was a natural scattering.
After the people were scattered, groups of people became isolated from one another by distance, geographical barriers such as mountains and rivers, and language. If you have ever traveled to another country where people do not speak your language, it is pretty hard to function and live, unless, of course, you have a translator. Without a translator, you might grunt and groan and gesticulate a yes and a no, but not much communication is taking place. Language can divide people. After they divide, they develop their own culture.
So, Marvin, as people were scattered and they migrated, the different groups were isolated and married only within their language group. Each group began to develop physical characteristics unique to their area. As they intermarried, certain characteristics would begin to dominate due to the group's small gene pool. So-called racial differences are not caused by evolution.
Today, with the advent of modern transportation, different people groups find that they live in close proximity with people from other people groups. Big cities like New York and Los Angeles have ethnic sections where one people group is in the majority. Hence, there are areas like Chinatown in San Francisco and New York City. There are also Korean communities, Vietnamese communities, Hispanic communities, and other ethnic groups, all living in close proximity.
This can sometimes be a very explosive situation. Gang wars, ethnic wars, street battles, rumbles are all common today. There are some churches that are doing an amazing job of preaching Christ and bringing widely divergent groups of people together. We have to praise the Lord for their pastors, leadership, and for the mixed congregations. Such churches are examples of how Jesus Christ can bring people together in peace and unity.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today are two great books by Susie and Bill Federer. At a time when they are tearing down statues and trying to rewrite history, it is great to have documentation of how miraculous our country really is. God really blessed America. The first book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 1. You can have a copy for a gift of $22 if you live in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. You can also order by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And this book, as well as all of our materials, are available on our website at swrc.com. The second book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 2. This book is also for a gift of $22. Better yet, get both books, Volumes 1 and 2, for a gift of $40. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And they are available on our website at swrc.com.
If you haven't already, you should have a look at our Southwest Radio Church Facebook page. If you like it, let us know by hitting the like button. We also have a YouTube channel. We have over 70 videos that are free to watch and enjoy on YouTube.
Thank you for tuning in today. Tune in tomorrow when Pastor Larry and Bill Federer conclude this series on the Watchmen on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Ministries.